Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. Marquise Munson taking you through this Thursday morning. Joe, it's been so nice lately to talk about some live sports. NBA, NHL, anticipating what in the world is going to happen with college football. It's nice.
Despite the angst and the the angst for Preds fans right now and the potential for hammer smashed hands, still think about this or no live sports. Have some perspective, Bob. Don't smash your hand anymore.
Yeah, leave your hand alone. It's going to be okay. In all seriousness, though, I fully expect the Predators to win tomorrow. I think they're going to come out and win in game four. Four is the game five. Now, what happens in game five? I don't know.
I don't know if I agree with you there.
You don't think so?
I don't know. I don't feel strongly they're going to win tomorrow.
I do.
Yeah?
I've had it all morning. I don't know why.
Okay.
But I do. I think they're going to win tomorrow. I have no clue what's going to happen in game five. I do know that game five, I'll be watching from the beach, so that'll be nice.
Ooh.
So I hope they win tomorrow. Because I'd like to watch.
Will you be able
beach.
To watch it from there?
Oh, yeah. Do whatever I want to from the beach, man.
Well, no, I know. I'm talking about the actual, because I've had some trouble out of market,
I got a hookup.
You got a hookup? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
There are some perks that come with being an independent correspondent with NHL.com.
Uh-huh. Gotcha.
Not a ton of them, but there are some perks that come with being a correspondent.
So, and if it's a day game like all these have been, in case people didn't see, Friday is also a 1:30 puck drop. If it's that, if they get to Sunday, and if it's that, I assume you'll be actually sitting on a beach watching it?
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah, that's outstanding.
Yeah. It will definitely be the greatest hockey viewing experience of my life. And I've been to a ton of games.
There are a lot of Predators fans, if it gets to that, who would love to have the option of jumping in the ocean if things don't go well.
Yes.
And I mean just to body surf.
Joe, we've talked a lot about the Duchesne play this morning. I watch it happen, and we haven't really discussed this part of it yet. It's not like going offside is just this totally uncommon thing in the NHL. You heard it. I think you asked the question to Roman Josi after the game yesterday. You were talking about Duchesne's mistake, and Josi was like, wait a minute, what mistake? What are you talking about? And it was
– which I did play, by the way.
Yeah, he did play that. By the way, we did not give Munson credit. He did play your question. Now, he combined it with another question from Vingan, but he still played it. That's good.
Yeah, no.
His question was better.
Wow.
I'm kidding, Joe.
No, you're probably right. It's fine. Don't mess with Joe Rule.
But, Yossi's response to it was, it's offsides. It happens 20 times a game. It's not that big a deal. He shouldn't be thinking about it. Normally, I agree. It is offside. It does happen. You're on the rush. Sometimes you can't hold your skate down long enough, and it happens. I get it. It's hard. That situation's different. They're tagging up. There's no reason for him to be offside there. Yossi's got the puck. There's no Arizona Coyote within 10 feet of him. It's not like they're on the rush there. They're just kind of coming back into the zone. Duchesne just left early. There's no way Josi was going to pass in the puck. Josi was skating the opposite way. It's just a lack of attention to detail at that point. So that's the type of issue that I have a problem with. I can handle you going offside if you're on the rush and you're just trying to get to beat the Coyotes down the ice. I get that. That happens. There was just no reason there to be offside. It was just lack of paying attention was what it was.
Yeah, remind me, Game 1 Stanley Cup Finals 2017, it was a Subban goal.
Forsberg
and
offside.
It was Forsberg offside, but that was
by 3/4 of an inch of a skate blade in
it
the
was
air, I think.
Really close.
And he was still, and this is a stupid rule anyway, but he was onside, his foot was just in the air off the ice. I think his right skate was in the air. So his left skate was across the line. His right skate was on the line, but it was in the air. Maybe the dumbest rule ever.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was debatable and argued a lot. And I think, look, you could certainly make a case for a different game one result if that goal and happens.
To that point, I still really haven't seen an angle where you can conclusively tell that Forsberg's skate was in the air, but that's another issue.
Right. So, But even with that one, if I recall correctly, that was what you're talking about, the more standard offsides where you are skating and sometimes you time it up just a fraction of a second wrong, and that happens. And that's what Roman Josi was saying. But you're absolutely right. The problem with this is what it was, the actual situation where he's waiting for them to enter the zone. I mean, it's just that's a situation where you should have way more control over not going offside. I mean, it's just look at the puck and then come into the zone. And with the speed Josi had, you know, like you said, he was kind of going the other way. I mean, yeah, you want to get in there and be part of the play, but you're not. You're not really part of the play. It was
And like there's two ways to kind of look at this. Number one, and first and foremost, it's on Duchesne to make sure that he stays onside. You're paying attention. You're doing what you need to do. But number two, you're going to have fans that have watched the NHL for a long time realize that most times throughout the history of them watching the game, this doesn't get called because the refs missed it in real life. There was no live action, you know, calling of the offsides, obviously. You had to go back and review it. The offside, and this is kind of the ironic part of this, the reason the review is in place really to begin with is to prevent situations from happening that Matt Duchesne did when he was with the Avalanche against the Predators when he was like literally 7 feet offside.
That was incredible.
And they let the play go and scored a goal against Chris Mason. That's what the rule is for. You're trying to eliminate these like egregious errors. But when doing that, you've got to check offsides, offside. So you got to go check it. I mean, Duchesne was offside by probably in real time, I don't know, a fourth of a second. Like it wasn't a whole lot. Didn't impact the play whatsoever. But by the letter of the law, he's offside. So you have fans kind of viewing it through two different lenses. Like, yeah, it's on you, Duchesne, to make sure you're doing what you're supposed to do and make sure that you're onside. But also, this sort of an incident right now that we're talking about is not really what this offside rule was created for in the first place.
Yeah, and I've seen some people say Duchesne made that rule happen. That was 2013, and that was incredible. If anybody hasn't seen the video of that, it's just amazing. I mean, he's so far offside that he actually is looking back for the puck while well into the offensive zone. And then
everybody else stopped. They stopped skating.
Yeah, so – yeah, you don't want that to happen. Now, I've heard people say he's why the rule happened, but the rule did not happen until 2015.
Yeah, it wasn't immediate.
So it was probably one of a few examples, right? I'm sure there are other
plays. That was the most egregious one, yeah.
That's the one people remember. And obviously, now you think about it, and of course, he gets popped with the Preds on something that has nothing to do with the play. So, yeah, there's a lot about this whole thing that are going to get Predators fans in their feelings a little bit. But again, this particular play and the way it looked is just, it's just one of those, there's just no need for that. And look, that's exactly the expression on his face on the bench. You know, they did a good job of, you know, the camera operator did a good job of having the split screen, having the official on the left side making the call, and Duchesne's reaction on the right, and it was probably very similar to a whole bunch of people who care about the Predators at that moment.
Yeah, and look, you know, in a way, I feel bad for the guy because obviously he didn't mean to do that. But that's a huge mistake to make at that time in the game. You're getting paid $8 million a year to come in and be a difference maker for this team. And I just haven't seen enough from him in this series. And this goes back to the regular season. He started off great. His first, like, 5 or 6 games, he had, like, 10 points. I mean, he was really, really good. And then just fell off. He just completely fell off after that. I think he finished the regular season with 13 goals. That's just not good enough for the amount of money that you're getting paid and like the expectations that David Poile and the Predators had for you coming in here. You got to be better. So it's not just that he went offside. Like, yeah, that's a mistake, and there needs to be some attention to detail that you got to pay there. But it's that combined with the fact that offensively you're not making any difference for this team whatsoever. That's kind of the combination of frustration that I think Predators fans are feeling right now.
Right, and again, that goal, not only is a go-ahead goal in the third period, and now you're in position, you have the lead in the third period against a team that is inferior to you, and you have been controlling, and you have a chance now to go up 2-1 in the series. It wasn't just that. It was also that Duchesne's line finally scores. Yeah. The other three lines have all scored in this series. Finally, the Duchesne line, after 8 periods of not scoring, scores potentially the game-winning goal. So you sort of get that off your back, and then all of a sudden it's back on. You know, the tough thing, Matt Duchesne already had a lot of pressure on him because of everything you just said.
Yep.
Going into this playoff. So now this situation, you think about the pressure on him on Friday, and then if they get to Sunday, it's high. It's not an ideal situation in this game. You know, people talk about gripping the stick a little bit tight. Like, you want to play with effort, and I think he's out there trying his best. But when there's a lot of pressure on you too, that can have a negative effect on you. So everyone's going to be watching Matt Duchesne even more than they were. That's just how it goes.
Yeah, no question about it. Real quickly, before we get to Teresa Walker, she'll join us in the next segment. The ACC has released their football schedule as well, beginning play on September the 12th. So Big Ten's released their schedule.
In between.
ACC has released their schedule, beginning play on September the 12th. And the SEC, they have not officially released theirs yet, I don't believe. I think they've got the timeline down, but they were making adjustments to the schedule.
Yeah, I feel so, like there's a little.
It's got to be soon, right?
Now, yeah. I did a little investigation here.
Uh-oh, we got an investigation.
Because, you know, this is what I do. Good journalism is kind of what I do.
Capital J.
Jeff Allen, who works within the athletic department of the University of Alabama.
Okay.
Now, he tweeted out, like, it's kind of like a pyramid, right? It's a pyramid setup. And the pyramid had Ole Miss, Georgia. It had, like, basically the bottom games all the way to the top, which the top was the national championship game. So he had Ole Miss, then Georgia, then a couple of other teams. I'm just going verbatim off what I saw. And then builds up to, like, the top one was Auburn and Texas A&M, SEC championship, and then conference semifinals and finals was at the top. So maybe it's Ole Miss Alabama starting their season with. Not going to confirm that. That would be kind of right because you want to start your schedule with someone like Ole Miss,
yeah,
who you can just beat up on first before Georgia.
Lane Kiffin, baby, coming in there.
I don't know, but it is good. It is good that every conference is spreading out their start day because some start in the beginning of September, some in the middle. So we're going to get college football throughout with different conferences throughout the, you know, the month
hopefully
of September.
We may.
Hopefully.
We may. We may get zero college football. But
maybe.
Yes.
I probably will say zero games, but I'm just going to be optimistic here.
I'm going to be optimistic with you. I'm hoping for it. We're all hoping for it.
No. Sports writers are rooting against
sports.
Oh,
you're right. Sorry about that. I forgot
about
that.
Cancel everything.
That's
please.
Right.
Cancel culture.
When we come back, Teresa Walker will join us at 8:15. AP, Grizzlies, Preds, Titans. She covers it all. That's next. This is Morning Drive. Live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't you wish, Joe, you could be as laid back as Kyle Turris is sometimes? Just awesome.
I love it. I can't even. It's like there's a little bit of Bill and Ted in there.
Yeah.
A little bit of Bill and Ted. By the way, did you know that's my favorite Prince song?
Yeah, I did. That's why I played it.
Okay.
But did you also
know
that?
You're the best, man. You're the best.
Did you also know that they're making a remake of Bill and Ted and it looks completely awful?
Well I'm sure it is.
Oh, it's just a sequel, right? Like they're in their
40s. It's the third installment. Yeah. It looks awful. I'm just going to say
well,
that.
Well, I'm kind of excited about it. I'm also excited that Beavis and Butthead is coming back with them as parents, too. So.
Oh, Ren and Stimpy's coming back.
Wow.
Yeah, Ren and Stimpy is coming back.
No more original ideas in Hollywood. Yeah. They just recycle the old stuff.
All the fodder for early 90s stoners back.
Hi, what if
beautiful world.
Bart Simpson was an adult now. He's Homer. let's just do it.
Let's just go ahead.
He's
Why
Homer
not?
Now.
Boy, all the gifts that Adam Vingan could put on the webs.
That's right.
The Bartman gif, that's going to be the first one.
That's right. Let's bring in our good friend Teresa Walker from the Associated Press, one of the best in the business. Teresa, thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you guys for your patience, considering, as I was telling Marquise, that if the number is not listed in my phone with an identity, the habit these day and age is just to ignore it, let it go to voicemail, and if they really want me, they'll call me back. And it's like, oops, I forgot I was talking to you guys for a moment this morning, and so apologies for being a few minutes late.
Okay, because Munson told us this was a busy signal. So I was like, oh, Teresa rocking
the landline. I was impressed. I really was.
So he did call you on your cell, though.
Yes, he called me on the right number, but it was like for in that period, I got like three different spam calls. Okay.
Oh, anybody I know.
Calls from Cumberland Furnace or Adams, Tennessee. And what I love in this week, I've been getting calls marked political spam.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they know today is election day, so they've been hitting my phone like crazy.
Yeah, it's awful. I take the same approach. If there's a number on my screen on my phone that I don't know, there's a 0% chance I'm answering that bad boy.
Text
That's
first.
Burned me a few times, too.
I just text people first. Yeah. Like if I'm trying to do an interview with someone, I never call anybody now. Yeah, because I do the same thing.
Absolutely. Well, Teresa.
I'm putting the phone number in. This won't happen again.
Perfect. That's all good. All good. Teresa, we've been talking about the Preds, obviously, all morning, and the Duchesne offsides play, largely dominating Game 3 but falling 4-1 in the game. What's your reaction to the Preds losing Game 3 and being down 2-1 in the series?
They played the game they needed to play, but the one thing that and maybe it's just me, but after the game, you know, Yossi and Victor Arvidsson and John Hines were all asked a variety of ways about, you know, when things happen, how they respond to them. And they all kind of act like they're ducks, that it's just water off the back. But, you know, we saw in Game 1 they did not react well. Coyotes, again, scored the first goal yesterday. The team that has scored the first goal in the first three games has won each game. And after, you know, now Torres did hit the post after the goal was overruled for the offside. But, you know, and yes, we know that there could be offsides a lot of times in games. But these things just seem to keep costing the Predators in moments when it just can't. And the thing that really bothered me was the way they played the go-ahead goal, the winning goal for the Coyotes. You know, they followed, stepping over to the side and completely missed the guy streaking toward the slot and, you know, ended up with a beautiful goal. You know, at times, guys, they remind me of my four-year-old playing soccer way back in the day. You know, they chase the puck a little bit too much and don't seem to play the whole ice. And, you know, that, and every time it does, it bites them. And yes, I retweeted Chris's post about how I asked John Hines yesterday, you know, about Game 5, what they're going to do. And he goes, well, we're 60 minutes away from, you know, being in Game 4, being 60 minutes away from Game 5. Sorry, my tongue is not quite awake, apparently. Mm-hmm. But we need to see this. You know, different coach, but we're still seeing this team make some of the same mistakes that cost them before they made a coaching change in January. And at this point, I'm not so sure that they can straighten up and fix these things and win two games against a good defensive team in Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, that answer from John Hines, to me, just a little bit of, because it was just a quick response to your question. Basically, the question was, and we played it earlier, but, you know, You're 60 minutes from elimination. You know, what do you tell your team? And he countered, yeah, we're 60 minutes from getting to Game 5. But it was a little bit of, you know, coach frustrated, which is totally understandable. But after a loss like that, I feel like John Hines, we saw it somewhat early in his tenure with personnel changes and some of the stuff he said after that. And now maybe at this point, even though I think this team is in a lot of ways playing much better, you're also seeing that frustration with why are these critical mistakes happening at these moments from this group? It's easy to not be playing this game and point out all the mistakes. I get that. But also, you do hope that you have guys who have been there and who will be less likely than a team like Arizona to make those mistakes, right?
Exactly. And, you know, yes, Darcy Kuemper played a great game yesterday. The way they were peppering him with shots in that first period, you know, it easily could have been 1-2-0 at that point, but it wasn't. And that's the thing, that the one time that Arizona gets a shot finally in that opening onslaught by the Preds, it goes in the net. So that's the kind of luck that they've been having. And it's not just puck luck at a certain point. At a certain point, all these guys who've gotten really good checks from David Poile and the Predators need to step up, be accountable, and play the, you know, and finish some of these games. It's that simple. And, you know, the sad part, they're also 60 minutes away from having to face these questions for whatever this next offseason actually is.
Teresa Walker from the Associated Press on the line with us. And, Teresa, I want to switch gears to the Titans real quick. What have you made of this Vic Beasley situation going on with the opt-out deadline today and everything that's happened over the course of the past week or so with the Titans and Vic Beasley? How strange has this been to you?
Oh, very, very strange, Robbie. I mean, Joe, I don't know about you, but I'm getting, you know, hints of Kevin Dodd. You know, it's like we've heard rumors that there was a funeral involved. Last week, John Robinson issued a statement and said that his absence was unexcused. You know, and he is subject to the CBA doesn't say that he's absolutely being fined $50,000 a day, but he is subject to that. And he was their big free agent guy that they got, $9.5 million contract. $3.5 million of that is his base salary. So that means a $6 million bonus. And, you know, they've been here for over a week, and we still haven't seen him. And, you know, that's the thing. You know, Mike Vrabel made it very clear yesterday. He's excited to see him. You know, he gave the right coach answer. He wants to coach him. He wants to see him. Can't wait to get him in here. But with what John Robinson said last week, it's like raise more questions than answers, and time just keeps ticking. If he's planning to opt out, you know, just tell the Titans, hey, I'm going to opt out. He doesn't have to wait till the deadline today. You know, the deadline we thought was going to be a few days ago, it just took the NFL and the PA some extra time to, you know, dot the T's, cross the I's, all that stuff. I know I just mixed that up, but, you know, to sign that document, setting today as the final deadline, he could have said a week ago, you know what, the way things are in my life, I'm going to opt out. There are two options for players to opt out in the NFL, and he could have taken either one of them, and yet it's like, no. So, you know, there's been some talk coming from Atlanta, but at this point you have to wonder, how much does this guy want to play football? Does he have something else going on? You hope it's not serious. You hope and pray that it's not health-related. But, yeah, every day that goes on, the questions just get louder and louder, and the Titans are going to need an answer soon. They're on the field. You know, their plan for their first practice as a team is a week from Friday, and today's Thursday. So we're 8 days away from that, and he has to go through protocol testing over a five-day period to even get in the building at this point. So times are ticking.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard from some people in Atlanta who actually thought that he might retire after last season. I mean, the idea of Vic Beasley not loving football is not new to this situation. So, and I mean, you asked the question, you had the first question yesterday of Vrabel after he sort of addressed it, but you asked him directly, have you actually talked to him since John Robinson put out the statement? Because he was sort of vague about it in his initial statement, and he said no. I mean, and that's my problem too, is just the lack of communication. To me, it speaks to, I guess I'm leaning much more toward, we're going to find out today Vic Beasley's not going to be part of this football team in 2020 than the other way around. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's just how I'm reading it.
Joe, I wouldn't be surprised at all for that. And, you know, Harold Landry, you know, he spoke to us on Monday and he hadn't met him. Now, granted, you know, they started their off-season program in pandemic mode, so everything was Zooms. But guys can get numbers. You know, they can call and they can talk. And, you know, we've seen the offensive line, who obviously is a really tight group anyway, you know, include their newcomer, Isaiah Wilson, into the pack. And, you know, they found ways to communicate over the stretch. But it makes you wonder how involved Vic Beasley was in these Zoom meetings in the off-season program. And yes, at this point, I'm leaning more to the fact that he's not going to be a Titan this year. And the sad part of it is, you know, then why sign the contract back in March? If you're thinking those thoughts, guys, you've got one foot out the door already. And, you know, at that point, you should not be signing contracts. You should be taking time to decide what you want to do before you make your next decision. So, this might give the Titans some much-needed help, because you do get salary cap space. Just look at the New England Patriots with all their opt-outs. But, you know, maybe that helps them go get some guy named Jadeveon Clowney. But, you know, the fact of the matter is they thought they were going to have Vic Beasley. They thought they could turn around a guy who led the NFL in sacks in 2016. And at this point, yes, it just doesn't feel like he's going to be here.
Teresa, to switch gears again, since you're, you know, a Jill of all trades and you do everything, let's talk about the Grizzlies for a second, because going into this bubble, we thought the Grizzlies were going to get the 8th seed. They're 3.5 games above everybody else. And then now all of a sudden you lose 4 straight, probably their 4 easiest games on their schedule. And now the Blazers are 1 game back from that 9th for that 8th seed. So now you think the Grizzlies are on the cusp of, you know, getting into that play-in tournament, or even not even making the playoffs at all?
Oh, Marquise, I think that they're going to end up eventually not making the playoffs. Now, I don't know if they managed to slide into that playing game, but, you know, the advantage that they had going to Orlando was they were healthy. You know, they had just Jaren Jackson Jr. was back, Brandon Clark, Grayson Allen, guys who, you know, Mike Krzyzewski in January saying this is going to be a season-ending kind of thing. He was back. He's been playing. And Justice Winslow, a guy who was about to dress up when the NBA said, nope, we're not playing. He, you know, he was injured when they traded for him in February. He was about to appear. And then he gets hurt in a team scrimmage, not even a scrimmage against another team, in a team scrimmage early in the bubble appearance. So he's out. Jaren Jackson Jr. tears a meniscus on Monday against the Pelicans. He's now out for the rest of whatever this is. So the depth that they had has taken a serious beating, and they need Jaren Jackson Jr. Guy had 33 points against the Trailblazers last Friday. He was really starting to find his game, shooting the three, you know, looking really good. Ja Morant can't carry it at all, and he's looking a little tired through this schedule here. And at this point, you know, even Taylor Jenkins seemed a little frustrated. They were dominating the Jazz in the first half yesterday, and then the Jazz come through with the run, get the lead, and it just fizzled from there. So, yeah, 0-4. At this point, I'm hoping that they win a game before they get knocked out.
Teresa Walker from the Associated Press has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Teresa, thanks as always. Great stuff, and we appreciate you joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys. And I'm putting the number right now in my phone.
There you go. Very, very nice. Teresa Walker, ladies and gentlemen, one of the best in the business. When we come back, Joe and I will dive a little bit more into the Vic Beasley situation, which is becoming stranger and stranger by the day for the Tennessee Titans. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, guys. You know, I know there's a probably a lot of questions and concerns, you know, about Vic Beasley. I just want to address, you know, where we are with that. And me personally, you know, we're excited to see Vic when he gets here. Again, have not he's not here. Everybody else is. And he's under contract. We expect him to be here. But again, have not have reached out, have not had, you know, much conversation with him. And, you know, we still look forward to getting him in here and coaching him when he gets here. I want to coach him and want him to be a part of the football team. So, you know, that's where I'm at. I know that there's going to be obviously questions. I'm hopeful that we can focus and I can focus on our football team and the guys that are here that are improving and that are trying to improve and the ones that we're coaching.
Oh, you always got to love the directed messaging towards the media. I hope we can focus on this. I hope we don't have to talk about all these other things.
Teresa.
Doesn't work.
Vrabel always gives Teresa first question.
Yes.
And she came right at, okay, specifically then, have you talked to him? And it was like, well, no.
No.
So that's exactly, and that tells the story. I think his statement there kind of told the story of frustration.
Yes.
And I understand the desire to talk about the actual team now and other things, and that's mostly what the Zoom press conference was. But
sure, but there's not really anything to talk about right now.
Yeah,
the
story
is where in the world is Vic Beasley?
Sadly, this is the story, and you know, the Titans have had. I mean, I think just about everybody who's been made available has been asked about Vic Beasley in some form. That's what happens. You know, if you talk to him, what's going on with this guy? Everybody wants to know what's happening with him, and we will know at 3 o'clock today, if not sooner, whether he is going to show up or if –
Well, we'll know whether or not he's going to opt out. I don't guess we know when he's going to show up still.
That's true. I mean, I guess there is also still – I mean, I've thought of this as, okay, we'll know for sure one way or the other. It's possible he doesn't opt out and just doesn't show up, I guess. You know, I guess just keep –
it's just weird.
Not showing up, yeah. I mean, I would think that there'd be resolution today. It's not guaranteed.
No,
I mean, it's weird. It's weird.
Yeah, and it's like weirder by the day because like John Robinson talked too. It doesn't seem like there's been any sort of further contact. And Robinson release a statement last week that he did talk to Vic Beasley and that he was supposed to be here in the next few days? Well, it's been a week since then. Vic Beasley's still not here. Mike Vrabel hasn't talked to him. Doesn't seem like any of the players have talked to him. He's just gone AWOL. And like Teresa said in the last segment, if you're going to opt out, fine. Opt out. That's great. And if you're still thinking about whether or not you're going to opt out, that's cool too. But you got to tell somebody, man. You can't just sit here and try to make decisions on your own when you're employed by this team and they're paying you money. They signed you to a $9.5 million contract. Like, there's a lot of things at play here. You got to be able to pick up the phone and communicate. This just gets weirder. Every day that he hasn't made contact with the Titans, this story to me just gets weirder and weirder.
Right. And so then my question also is, so what was the contact like that had John right. Robinson put out a statement? If there was some, what was the nature of that? Was that just he said, was it like through the agent contact? You know, like in college sports, college coaches always say, no, I mean, I haven't talked to anybody about the job. That's because our agent
exactly
is doing it. So it, was this a situation of actual direct contact with Vic Beasley, or was this some message through the agent and that's that? I don't know. But if there was any sort of contact, then why are we sitting here in limbo? I mean, I think Mike Vrabel's presser yesterday clearly told the story of a coach just hoping to hear something and sort of at the mercy of this player. And, of course, if he does opt out, then you're talking about $9.5 million more in cap space.
Right.
I believe, and then that's just there's already urgency, and there's plenty of money to go address this. Again, I think they should have, and I think they were in on Clowney when they thought Vic Beasley was showing up, and they were going to try to help him find his form from a few years ago. But now it's got to be almost desperate. I mean, I know a lot of people say, hey, there's some young guys in there, and Harold Landry and some of these other guys. Correa was good late last year, but I don't think that's nearly enough.
Do you think we see at any point today kind of a wave around the league of opt-outs? You know, the deadline's today, 4 o'clock Eastern time, 3 o'clock Central time. Do you think, you know, shortly after we get off the air, as we get closer to that deadline, there's a pretty big wave of opt-outs around the league? How do you think this is going to play out?
Yeah, I would think there'd be some. I would think that there'd be some people. It's just like signing day. Again, taking everything to college football, it's like that last day. You've got some people that are just weighing decisions. And is it Auburn or Alabama, you know? And
yeah.
So I think you have to – I would think you would have to have some guys out there who are really struggling with this and – waiting until today, waiting, maybe trying to get more as much information as they can last minute before making a decision. So I don't know if I expect a whole bunch, but I would think that we'd see some today. I think we had Charles Robinson on yesterday, and he thought might get pushed into the 60 range,
yeah,
60
yeah.
to 70 range. And right now we're in the, I think, low 40s.
Yep.
So that seems about right. 15 to 20 guys today opt out. That's about what I would expect.
Got a text in on the text line from Ben that says, I hope this question ends up not mattering because we get good news on both fronts. But if we don't get Beasley or Clowney, how can the Titans possibly take the next step with a defense that could potentially be bottom half of the league, considering all of our losses, including the D coordinator in Dean Pease? It's a great question. I mean, if you're not going to have much of a threat on the pass rush end of things, it's going to be difficult no matter how good your secondary is to sustain, you know, enough coverage long enough to have a good defense. I mean, if you're not getting to the quarterback and they've got all day to stand back there and throw, it doesn't really matter how good your secondary is. Teams are going to get open, and they're going to move the ball, and they're going to score points. So this should be of huge concern, I think, to John Robinson and Mike Vrabel.
Right, and Jarrell Casey was moved, and it was sort of like a year earlier than you might have thought, and you open up cap space with that. But you also lost a good player. He's still a good player. So if Vic Beasley ends up not being part of this team, you know, you also think about, you could have had Casey still and you would feel better about things. You'd feel better about your front seven if you had Jarrell Casey than if you didn't. So now you lose him, you know, you got rid of him and you are putting a whole bunch on Harold Landry.
A lot.
And not really providing the support that he's going to need. I think, to take another step as a player. It's just how it works. So, yeah, I think those are all fair points, and I think bottom half is very possible, even though I think at inside linebacker, at safety, at corner, I think they're really strong. I think Jeffrey Simmons could be a star in this league. There are still some things individually that could break well for them, and they could be better than that. But you're counting on a lot of those things to go that way. You've got to me, shore up that edge position. Again, I still thought so with Beasley. Without Beasley, no doubt about it. So can you get to the quarterback? Can you affect the quarterback? And the Dean Pease thing is significant too. There's no doubt about it. He was a great defensive coordinator, and you're replacing him now.
When we come back, the bubble is on the verge of bursting for a few teams in the NBA and the NHL, including a couple of teams here locally. We'll get into that next. But first, don't miss a second of the action as the Preds face the Coyotes in Game 4 tomorrow. Watch party viewing destinations include Burger Republic and Party Foul. Stop by Burger Republic in Lenox Village or Mount Juliet and enjoy the Forsburger for a limited time and $4 Happen Harry's Pints. Party Foul locations are at the Cool Springs Galleria in Franklin, in Murfreesboro off Broad Street, in Donaldson off Lebanon Pike, and downtown in the Gulch. So make sure you wear your Preds gold and bring the noise to root on the Preds. Puck drop at 1:30 tomorrow, 102.5 The Game. We'll be at the Party Foul in the Gulch and the Burger Republic in Mount Juliet from noon until the end of the game. So make sure you pick up some game and Preds swag while you're there. Both Burger Republic and Party Foul are safely open, so keep that in mind as you look ahead to tomorrow's Game 4. We'll be right back. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Well, Joe's head's bobbing, so this must be the song that he picked out.
This is my song.
It's got to be your song.
Pete Rock, CL Smooth. This is more of a deep cut, though.
It is. This is not a Will They Reminisce Over You.
Yeah, Will They Reminisce Over You. That's the one people think about. This is also a great jam.
Munson, do you approve of this? He's been on a roll lately where...
I love Pete Rock.
Okay.
And CL Smooth.
As long as I don't do breakdancing
stuff,
Rex Munson's
was on a roll lately where Munson,
there's only like
feeling it.
One breakdancing song you could play that's actually like, oh, okay, and that's African Bambaataa and the Zulu Nation, Planet Rock.
Okay.
That's a great song.
You can play that, and I'll be like, oh, okay, that was cool. But, I mean, last two songs you picked, like,
a little rough.
Straight off of Breaking, by the way, both songs, and I'm like, no, thank you, Joe.
So you're telling me if I request some Grandmaster Flash and Melly Mel, you're like, no, don't like that. I mean, I like African Bambaataa, but those are peers.
Okay,
New
yeah.
New York in the mid-'80s.
But, yeah, but when you go from that Grandmaster Flash
to Jerry and Ollie.
To Jerry and Ollie, then that's like a line for me. You stepped over that line.
I mean, anyone who doesn't recognize the cinematic achievement that Breakin' was, I don't know what I can do
You have no
for
time
it.
For them.
Wasn't Ice-T in that movie?
Actually, I think he was. Yes
he was in
I
that
I think
movie.
Ice-T was in that, yes.
Which?
Well, and Beat
he
Street.
Want, yeah.
See, Beat Street was actually the much more – legit New York breakdancing movie, and that had like Kool Moe Dee and Grandmaster Flash, Melly Mel, had a lot of great people in it. There's your breakdancing moment.
There. Brought to you
carry
each
on,
day
Robbie. Yeah.
By Joe Rexroad. Got a text in on the text line from Kyle, and we were talking about Vic Beasley in the last segment. Kyle says, as someone who watches both the Titans and the Falcons, I can tell you don't worry about taking the next step just by having Beasley. He can get some sacks, but he literally can never get one when you need it or when it matters. Remember how it felt watching Turris all last year? That's all it always is watching him. He has one good year, and that's all that's keeping his reputation afloat. I think that's a very popular sentiment coming from Falcons fans and people around the Falcons organization. Vic Beasley, yeah, he can pad some stacks, but when it matters, when it's a clutch situation, Vic Beasley's not really going to come up big for you.
I heard that a lot from Falcons fandom when the Titans signed him, and I think a lot of Titans fans are like, yeah, you're just bitter because
he left.
Yeah, and he got 8 sacks last year. He's not that bad. There's a little bit more with Titans fans now, but
what's funny is like usually when a free agent leaves, like the opposing team that he left from is usually like, oh no, he should have stayed here with us. And with Beasley, it was just like, oh, okay, cool.
You have fun, man.
All right, y'all have fun with that.
See, I took the signing partially based on all that stuff. We've talked with TD, Teron Davenport, and some of his reporting that he was really surprised when they did make the signing based on information he had. You know, like, it kind of didn't add up, but I always took it as, I think Mike Vrabel's very confident in two things, ability to reach players and to coach them up. And so if you feel like you can bring someone in and get more out of them, Vic Beasley is probably a worthwhile project, a guy who certainly has talent. I mean, the year that he led the league in sacks, he looked unblockable to me at times. I mean, I think he's sort of – obviously, he hasn't been great against the run, more of a situational player, but still – a guy who has some ability off the edge to be a playmaker for you. So I understood from the Vrabel perspective of, you know, coming here, we can make it different. But you can also hear the frustration from Vrabel yesterday in that he hasn't even talked to the guy.
When you look at the NBA and the NHL, there are some teams that are on the verge of having those bubbles burst, man. I know the NBA hasn't really gotten underway in terms of their playoffs yet, but – man, Munson, it's been a rough go of things for the Memphis Grizzlies. It's just not going well in Orlando for them.
Yeah, well, we got a text in the text line that said, "Yay, I like when you guys talk about the Grizzlies, and we appreciate that, but we're not going to be talking about them for long." It's like four more games is probably all we're going to get from the Grizzlies. And it's sad because, you know, going into it, a lot of the hype was surrounding, obviously, Zion and the Pelicans because everybody wants Zion within that playoff system, especially if he's going against LeBron James, a guy who he's being compared to. And then also, yeah, the NBA wants the Blazers in the playoffs because you got the cover boy for 2K and Damian Lillard, and you got a strong team that for a 1-8 seed is pretty competitive.
About as good as it gets.
And it's about 1-8. As good as it gets, instead of, you know, watching Orlando versus the Bucks, which is probably going to be awful. So the Grizzlies, you know, like going into the bubble, was already an underdog in the situation itself, because a lot of people didn't want them to be in that 8 seed. So then you have this opportunity to prove guys wrong, and you don't take that opportunity. And through four games, and you know, every team's at the midway point after today, so every team will be at four games after today's games are over with, and you're on the same cusp as the Washington Wizards, who have not won a game as well. You're on the same cusp as the Sacramento Kings, who haven't won a game as well. And so it's very disappointing, especially knowing the hype. And it's sad because going into the season, the Grizzlies didn't have this hype. It was kind of this is a rebuild year. This is the reason why they got Andre Iguodala to kind of help the young players out. And Ja Morant's going to go through his growing pains. Jaren Jackson's going to grow into his role. But they got a new coach, and they did the complete opposite. And, you know, they shocked the world. And then everybody started paying attention to them. And as soon as everybody started paying attention, they started falling off.
Yep.
Falling off the map. And that's what's going to happen. Look, I think, and I agree with what Teresa said, you know, I thought that the Grizzlies going into it was going to have to play in a play-in tournament, but I thought they were going to get out of that play-in tournament. Now, after watching four games and Jaren Jackson's injury, look, the Grizzlies are done after four games because their four games that are left are pretty hard.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately for the Grizzlies, I don't think they're going to make it. I don't even think they're going to be in a play-in tournament.
No. It sucks because they have been a great story this year. I was really looking forward to it. I think, honestly, I hear what you're saying on Portland, you know, and Dame, and those guys are great, and it could be a good 1-8. But I think a lot of people were excited to think about maybe a play-in with Zion against Ja Morant, you know, former AAU teammates. I think Ja Morant has lifted the profile of that team a ton. I know I was excited about it. The funny thing is, we're talking about this now. They are still in the 8th spot. They are still a game ahead of Portland, but they're only 2 ahead of San Antonio, 2 ahead of the Pelicans. If they lose out, you would think that they would get passed by at least 2 teams, which would obviously knock them out. For people who don't know, in the play-in, if the 9 is within 4 games of the 8, they have a play-in where the 9 has to win 2, the 8 has to win 1. That would have been a ton of fun with Memphis fully healthy. But without Jaren Jackson, it's not a good team.
No.
I mean, he is their second best player and a really, really good and underrated player. And it's too bad.
See, what helps the Grizzlies out in this situation, and, you know, they lost 4, and these are probably the 4 easiest games they could have won. And all those games were close with the exception, you know, of that Pelicans game where they lost by 10 and Ja Morant struggled from the 3-point line, but the rest of their games were pretty close. But you got the Thunder, who obviously they torched the Lakers last
night. Thunder are good, man.
And the Thunder are really good under Billy Donovan, and they got Chris Paul. They got veteran leadership on that team. They're pretty good. And then you got the Raptors, who obviously the Raptors, probably the most underrated team in the East, even though they're probably They're a 3 seed right now, and they probably can be easily a 1 seed if it wasn't for the Bucks. But lucky for the Grizzlies, like, I think the Celtics and the Bucks both, especially the Bucks, I think that's an easy win for the Grizzlies because they're going to sit Giannis. Like, Giannis only played 16 minutes in their last game. I think it's going to be the same situation with him this game, to especially going into the last game before the playoffs. I think they sit that Giannis and Chris Middleton sit out that last game.
I was going to say, if Middleton's playing, they still might not beat him.
Well, yeah, but so if they sit Chris Middleton and they sit Giannis like I think they're going to, then that's a win for them. So all you have to do is control what you do in these next 3 games because I think that Bucks game can be a gimme, but as we've learned from this bubble system in the NBA, no game's a gimme because the Nets, you know, beat the Bucks. So, you know, it's going to be difficult for them to get back into it, but it's not looking too hot for the Grizzlies right now.
Got a text in on the text line. It says, before the pause, the Grizzlies' remaining schedule probably would have knocked them out of the playoffs anyway. That's a good point because why their schedule is so tough here in Orlando. The NBA is trying to kind of mimic that. They did have a real tough schedule coming down the stretch in the regular season before the pause anyway.
But I think the difference is momentum. And I think when you ride and this is one thing I was telling my friend yesterday when we were talking about it is, you know, this system, and you see in NHL and you see with hockey, you got teams that rode momentum, had to have a 3-month pause in their play, and then they're coming out sluggish. You look at the Lakers. Lakers were hot in the season, but now you look at them, they don't even look like the same team. And you look at a team like the Nets, for example, who we thought was going to have coronavirus outbreaks throughout their team and then lose, they're 2-2. And you see, look at a team like the Spurs, who went pretty slow in the season as well. They, you know, they've been winning games. And so it's always like, yeah, that's true. Yeah, their schedule was pretty hard, but you're still riding on season momentum and didn't have a 3-month pause in your play. So, you know, I think they had a better chance in the regular season than they do now.
But they could have won a couple of these games. I mean, what if they had Jaren Jackson yesterday? Would they have won that game?
Probably so.
I think so.
I mean, they weren't doomed from the start. You had to pull out a couple of those close ones when you still had your full team.
In the NHL, though, we talked about this bubble and how we could see some crazy stuff heading into it. Montreal up 2-1 against Pittsburgh. Chicago up 2-1 against Edmonton. Both 12 seeds right on the verge, Joe, of advancing and moving to what I guess technically is the first round, quote-unquote, of the playoffs.
Yeah, 2-12s and an 11. The 11-seed Arizona Coyotes are right there. It's the Montreal-Pittsburgh one. And I know Pittsburgh has struggled this year. They've been hurt this year.
They lost like 350 man games to injury. Like,
yeah,
it's unbelievable.
But now they're a lot healthier. Yes. And I was like, okay, that one, I know Carey Price is great, but what you don't expect is for Pittsburgh to have a 3-1 lead in it was the third period, I believe, right?
And
just completely collapse like they did. It's crazy stuff. Edmonton-Chicago, that one surprises me less just because of who both those teams are. One with championship DNA, the other with what would DNA would that be? Super talented and
Draisaitl, McDavid and nothing else.
My goodness. Head up area that you don't want your head to be up. DNA sometimes with that team.
This is why in the NCAA tournament you always go with the 11th seed.
Yeah, that's true.
The 6th.
Well, the 12. The 12 beats
the
5.
And the 12 seed.
Yeah, both of those happen.
11 and 12 seeds, usually in the NCAA tournament, they're like that team that is really good, but they just weren't good enough to be like a top 8 team.
Right.
So they're 11.
Yeah, you can count on
some obscure conference. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Got a text in on the text line real quick before we go to break. Going back to our discussion with Vic Beasley, we talked about, you know, the Atlanta fans basically saying, you know what, have fun with that. See how that goes for you. Slick texts in and says, a lot of Dolphins fans talk trash about Tannehill last offseason too. How'd that work out? It's a good point.
That is fair. I mean, it's guaranteed 90% of the time that at least some fans would be like, yeah, didn't really want that guy anyway. Yeah. Now, with Tannehill, I think most of the league was like, I mean, I know around here it was like, oh, good backup.
Yeah.
That's a nice number
best
two
backup
for
in the league, yeah.
That's about the extent of what we were talking about.
Yeah. Then it worked out pretty well for the Titans after that. No question about it. When we come back, we'll dive back into the Preds, react to their Game 3 loss against the Coyotes. That's next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.